You're there.
I'm there. I love Skype.
I guess it's fine. It's fine.
Skype's the best. Yeah, I like calling the testing lady and talking to her for a minute, and then calling you, and then having you not be able to hear what I have to say.
Do you think the testing lady took everything away from you?
I think the testing lady's messing with me, because she'll repeat back what I have to say, which is fun.
I think the cicada outside my window was trying to make love to my air conditioner. I think the sound my air conditioner was making was just like really just what the cicada needed right at this moment. And because I turned the air conditioner off, and then the cicada was just like going real hard at whatever it was doing. And then the air conditioner like died down and, you know, sputtered off. And the cicada was like, oh, okay, sorry.
Do you think he was talking to the cicada, perhaps?
I think it was trying to communicate, but maybe it was like a love language type of thing.
Yeah, same frequency, wrong words. How you been?
Good. Aaron is in Las Vegas, so it's just me and the dog.
Work trip?
No, actually, pleasure trip.
Oh, bachelorette party?
No, way cooler than that. This is specifically, I don't even know what the name of the convention is, so I'll just make one up. It's like Sharp Metal Things Convention. That's the name of it.
It's a CES?
No, Sharp Metal Things, not just metal things.
Okay.
This is like
Swordfest.
Pretty much. Like, think small. I should say small, sharp metal things. Or small, sharp, spinny metal things. That's what she's at a convention
for. Is she going to buy, like, shurikens?
I mean, I'm sure there's...
Am I on the right track here?
There is no doubt. I'm not trying to be mysterious at all. I just have no idea, honestly, what to call this thing. No, like, literally, it's probably, like... I mean, it's an... So, have you heard of Everyday Carry?
Yeah. That's the thing where people take everything out of their bag, line it up in little squares, and take pictures.
Okay, but what in the pictures that you see, what are the objects in the pictures that you normally see? Because I'm still new to this whole concept.
Okay, yeah, everyday carry. So okay, you're gonna start off with your phone probably, and then perhaps you'll take off the phone case and lay that on the back so you can see what the phone case looks like, and then you're gonna have your binoculars and your first aid kit and your pocket knife and your earplugs.
Where is this person going that you're describing?
I don't know. This is it's your everyday bag. What do you carry?
You carry your first aid kit every day?
God, you never know.
Oh my gosh. No, like, okay, so Aaron's everyday carry is specifically made up of like metal items, like titanium and makume is like a really big makum. I don't know really. She says makume, and she'd probably be really embarrassed to know that I'm talking about this right now.
Is this macrame? Like
no, not macrame. Makume. It's a type of metal or some alloy. I don't really know. I should.
I'm assuming it's like it's lightweight, but it's very sturdy.
I don't even know if it's lightweight. I don't know. The titanium stuff is lighter, I feel like. But yeah, essentially, it's a convention for people who just like to, like, it's like, think of like, what's the word? Artisanal spinners? Is that a thing?
Like fidget spinners?
Yeah, like fidget spinners, but artisanal. Like or
okay.
Custom things. Like, she has these pens, like these metal pens, and they're pretty ridiculously ornate. I'll send you a link later, and you can look at all.
Interesting.
She has an Instagram specifically for her everyday carry.
Does she really?
Yeah. Somebody at work today was interested in it because I mentioned she was away, and they're like, "Oh, where is she? She's at a festival or convention thing." And I was like, "Oh yeah, okay. So this is what she's, you know, this is what she's at." And they're like, and they without me even saying anything, they just go, "Oh, everyday carry." I'm like, "Oh, okay." And he immediately recognized like the knives and like spinners and like the little trinkets someone would carry around, like worry stones or something like that, but they're made of metal and like neodymium or diamond. I don't know, man. I say that a lot, but
okay. So good. When she's traveling, does her everyday carry make it really hard to get through airport security? Because it sounds like this would be a disaster.
No, it would. It would, except she's not allowed to take knives on airplanes, so she doesn't.
Right.
We did go to a concert in Brooklyn probably like a month or two ago, and she did bring her knife by accident and was surprised when venue security wouldn't let her in. So she literally took the knife and she went to a, like, she found like a cigarette, an empty cigarette carton or a cigarette box. Is that what you call them? Like it, down an alley near the venue, and hid her, you know, very expensive knife in this cigarette box and just prayed to God that it was still going to be there after the end of the show. And sure enough, it was. She hid it well enough. She made it look like trash well enough that nobody bothered her with it.
Oh, man. Yeah, I took knives to school on accident on many occasions, because as a scout, I would often have it in like a pair of jeans or my backpack. And then when I switched gears to go back to school, I would get to school, I'd be rummaging through my bag for a book, and my pocket knife would just go spinning out onto the floor, meaning that I had to grab it very quickly and stash it in the back of my locker and pray to God that nobody saw.
Did you get in trouble?
No, I was never caught, thank God, because, I mean, even something as minor as like accidentally bringing your pocket knife, like they don't care why it's there, just that it is there. And a lot of kids have gotten suspended for that kind of thing, or even expelled. Because it's happened multiple times, so that's a rough thing. But I can't imagine the people leaving this convention are going to have an easy way home.
I mean, you can check a firearm. Like, you have to declare it, though. You have to, like, when you're checking your luggage, you'd be like, I'm declaring a firearm. And they're like, okay, I'll put the firearm sticker on it or something like that.
Jeez, what a mess.
I almost got arrested once in Boston.
Why?
For my unintentional everyday carry.
What was it, like box cutter or something?
No, way worse. It was, okay, so I don't know what the rules are in Ohio, but in Massachusetts, brass knuckles are illegal.
Yeah.
So in like senior year of high school, maybe like freshman year of college, my group of friends from home in Boston, we all ordered brass knuckles as like a, you know, a group gag gift, I guess, but they're illegal. Mm-hmm. So you couldn't ship them to Massachusetts. We shipped them to New Hampshire, drove up to New Hampshire and then drove back down again, with the box of brass knuckles. And we divided them up and we gave them as like a Christmas gift or something like that. And it's something that I had in my bag, these brass knuckles, for probably all 4 years of college. And then after I graduated college, I would just keep them there, you know, like I never really went anywhere but class with my book bag. I went to school in the woods too, so there's really no need for me to have them. And I got called for jury duty probably like 1 or 2 years after I'd graduated. So by this point, these knuckles have been in the bag for probably close to 5 or 6 years. And
yeah, just in case.
Yeah, just in case, you know. And I'm going through the courthouse security, and my bag, obviously I have my same book bag on me, and it goes through the metal scanner, and I'm not paying attention, and suddenly somebody near me, like one of the security officers, goes, "Oh my God," and like calls a supervisor over, and they start going through my bag like, "What do you got in here?" And they pull it out, and these knuckles are like spiked knuckles. They're like, they're not like, you couldn't ever pass them off as anything else besides weapons. They're more ornate than anything. They're more for decoration, but like I can't imagine anybody ever use them. And the guy pulls it out, and he's just like, he takes me like aside, and he's like, "I could have you like I could write you up for this. I could have you arrested or something like that." Like, he basically implies that I could be in a lot of trouble, which I definitely could, because I was carrying a weapon in like in a courthouse, first of all, but also in a state that disallows them. So like, that's, I don't think it's the same as carrying a firearm, but it's probably close to it. And the guy just confiscated it, the guy.
Yeah.
And then for lunch break for the jury, the jurors, we all went to lunch, and I came back, and everybody else had this like one little badge that was just like, "Oh, let me back in. I don't need to go through security again." But they saw me in like walking into the house, like, no, you go right back into the x-ray machine and get scanned again. And while I was going
and
through,
that's when they found your switchblade.
Well, no, luckily I was not that, I mean I was stupid as hell, but luckily I was not that stupid. I mean it could have been that stupid, but then they like, the guy, the supervisor who's running the machine, they're like, "Why are you making this guy do this?" And he goes, "Because he brought this in." And he reaches into like a box near the x-ray machine and pulls out my knuckles, and he's like, "Because he brought these in." And he just holds them up, and his supervisor's like, "Oh, dang." And like, It was a bad move on my part, you know?
I want to see in that box. Is it just full of brass knuckles?
It's probably just full of knives. I would guess like full of like pocket knives and stuff like that are a little bit too big, yeah, or whatever the rule is.
Money clips that are sharpened to a point. Mm. Oh, goodness.
Toothbrushes filed down.
That's great. And, in the state of Missouri, where I go for vacation every year, they have a lot of places that they call junk shops. And these are not thrift stores. This is not like an antique place. This is junk. This is generally just absolute junk. The nicest things that they have, though, in these shops are the knives in the jewel cases. And so in the jewel case, you can find all kinds of knives, you know, like buck knives and flip out knives, like Leatherman tools, like the whole nine. But then they also sell in these jewel cases paperweights and belt buckles. And these are basically what you got caught with, because they can't sell them in the state of Missouri either. But if they advertise them as either paperweights or belt buckles, they can get away with it. How you'd use it as a belt buckle, I don't know, but it's definitely there. And then they have letter openers as well. And I'm sure you can guess as to what kind of sharp object those would be.
Do you have a fan on in the background?
I do. I forgot to turn off my AC. One sec.
I knew I heard something.
It's very hot here.
I know, I was running mine.
So yeah, so illegal things, weapons. It's so weird. Like, why would you why was that a gag gift for your group of friends? Like, why? Ooh. Why brass knuckles?
All right. Well, this is going back really far. Additionally, with that gag gift was around like 16 belt buckles were given out on that day as well too. Actual belt
actual
buckles,
ones.
Not like yeah. So in high school we had a gang. We were in a gang, as all suburban youth have. We were called the Rocket Ships. We still are called the Rocket Ships, I guess.
By who?
And by the rival gangs.
Oh.
I think we named ourselves after the Jets. You know how like we were like, what's cooler than a jet? And we're like, a rocket ship is cooler than the jet, so we picked rocket ships.
Do the waitresses still like recognize you when you come back in town?
Actually, yes. We formed the gang because we wanted to be a group of people that took over our... Do you have Bickford's in Ohio?
No. Is this,
did you
is this like
have
a,
Bickford's?
It sounds like a diner. Is that like a diner sort of establishment?
It's like probably a pretty small regional chain. Okay. Of diners type places. Like, it's like Denny's.
We have Frickers.
Like, worse font. You also have, like, what's that one we went to? Horton and Tim... Did we go to...
Tim Hortons is a... That's a Canadian thing. They do have them in Ohio now, but that's coming down from the north.
What did we go to that one time that we had breakfast together?
I don't know. I thought I made pancakes.
You did not cook that morning. It was you, me, May, and my bandmates.
It probably would have been, like, Bob Evans or...
Bob Evans, it was a person. It was a man's name,
yeah,
so I guess Bob Evans was
place.
Probably
yeah.
It. I'll check my receipts.
Yeah, that's an Ohio brand. Anyway, this place, what's this place?
Which one? Oh, Bickford's?
Yeah,
oh,
Bickford's,
we actually
okay.
care about that still?
Yeah.
No. Yeah, we were a gang, and we had to take it over. Like, basically, we would show up to this restaurant, and everyone would just get too uncomfortable because we were really annoying teenagers that had just gotten their learner's permits and driver's licenses, and were just annoying enough to make everybody want to leave. And it was just our place to go on, like, a Friday night. And we were like, whoa, we're like a gang. We kind of just tore this place up, you know, and it made everybody uncomfortable. We're like the Rocket Ships. And so, anyway, we just bought each other brass knuckles and belt buckles, like all gangs.
To intimidate the seniors that don't get up from their chairs when you walk in the room.
There was another, there was a rival gang called, I think they were called the Goon Squad, in the next town over. And
that's
they,
a parody
I think,
of the Goonies.
Actually, yeah, I guess. I think that's just a term too, the Goon Squad. And they, I think they actually hated us and did want to hurt us physically, but I don't think that's why we got... Mm. I don't think that's why we got brass knuckles.
That's interesting. In my town, I guess all the rivalries were based around what Yu-Gi-Oh cards you had.
That was a... really?
Yeah.
I guess you are a few years younger than me. A
little bit. Yeah. Actually, I was just talking about this with May the other day. It was weird. I don't even know why it popped in my mind, but she was talking about like the things that, you know, she used to do in her small Ohio town from the western side of the state. And on my side, like, you know, People would do like lemonade stands to make money, and I think that's where it came from. We saw some kids selling water, just being entrepreneurial during his last couple of weeks of summer break. I thought that was admirable, but it made me think about this time in one of my summers where I put on a Yu-Gi-Oh! Tournament for the entire town. Like I made the flyers, I put up the flyers all around town. We had like a buy-in. We used the buy-in to, you know, like buy prizes for the winners of the tournament and everything. And yeah, Yu-Gi-Oh! Was like really big in my town for a short amount of time around middle school. But yeah, I mean, people would get beat up and like jumped in town for Yu-Gi-Oh!
Legitimately jumped and beat up?
For their Yu-Gi-Oh! Cards.
At what age? What age are the people that are getting jumped and beat up?
Oh, God. This would have been like anywhere between 5th and 7th grade, probably.
How do you jump someone? Is it like when you're walking home from school?
Yeah, a lot of times it's walking home from school. Like once you get a couple blocks away from school, like, you know, everybody in town walked. Like it was at most is, you know, like a 10-minute walk, and everybody walked because all, you know, everybody's parents went to work and everything. There wasn't really, there was busing, but it was for like the barely out of town kids. There were like 2 buses. So I guess when you were far enough away from the school that you didn't have to worry about like crossing guards noticing or anything, everybody kind of knew where everybody lived anyway. So if there was a kid that had a, you know, a blue eyes, white dragon that you really wanted, you would just wait in the bushes and wait till he came by, pull your bike out in front of him and threaten to cut him or something. I don't know. I was never, I guess, bothered. I had good cards, but I also rode my bike and I rode fast. So I'm sure they just didn't mess with me, but I heard about it all the time, especially on like the lower half of town.
Wow, you guys are vicious 6th graders.
Oh yeah, you learn things fast in Rittman, Ohio. That's for sure.
Jeez.
Yeah. Huh. Man, I think about weapons a lot when I think about my youth because, you know, I grew up with pocket knives and BB guns, and you know, I think I got like my first knife when I was like 9 years old or something as like a birthday present, or maybe even younger than that. Maybe I got my BB gun around 10. But like weapons were very much like a thing, and I don't know how like regular that is for people who don't live in rural communities or aren't involved in things like the Boy Scouts or whatever.
Yeah, I definitely got a Swiss Army knife when I was probably like 7 or 8, but it was like the most dull. Like my good friends from New Hampshire, whenever we'd get together, I'd be like, "Look at my Swiss Army knife." They would laugh at me because it was like if you flipped out the saw blade on the Swiss Army knife, mm-hmm. it was rounded off.
Oh, yeah,
it was like
yeah.
very much a Swiss Army knife designed for children.
Sure.
Like hardcore for children. And it was not like, I think one of my friends like grabbed it and started like putting the knife on his arm, like to show how dull it was, that it was not able to cut skin. Like that's how bad it was. And that's like, okay, so that's like a suburban Boston thing that we had. I had some friends in that were like scouts that would get like nice knives though.
Well, that's because we all learned that a dull knife was actually more dangerous. Like it's actually worse to get cut with a dull knife than it is a sharp knife, because a sharp knife will make a very clean incision, whereas a dull one can really mess you up.
So I guess in that scenario, the knife is not a weapon though, right? It's more like an accident that I got cut by this thing.
Well, I mean, if you can cut with any knife, like even like a kid's Swiss Army knife can be dangerous, but it's always better to get cut by a nicer knife. I guess that's what I'm trying to say. Like still a shorter blade, but if it's a sharper knife, I feel like you're going to be more careful with it anyway. You're not going to be like testing it on your arm. Like, I don't know, when I was in scouts, we would test our knives and their sharpness on like our arm hair. Like if you took the blade and just kind of ran it down your arm flat, if it was sharp, it would cut off the hair. It would just shave it right off. And so that was always the test we used. But you had to be careful because, I mean, if you angled that knife even a little bit more, you could cut yourself pretty badly on. Get your scout masters in a whole bunch of trouble. But you weren't in scouts. Like you didn't have like, was that even like a thing in your area? Did you have like scout troops that your friends were involved with or anything?
Not my close friends, no, but I definitely knew kids in school. And then one of my best friends in high school was an Eagle Scout. He got his Eagle Scout while we were in high school together.
He's one of those definitely achievers. Was a thing. I got mine just before 18.
You got yours before 18?
Yeah. Well, you have
That's when he got his.
Well, you have to get it. You have to get it before 18. Once you're 18,
you like
you're
age
an adult
out of the Boy Scouts.
Yeah, of course. Like you can't go on a camping trip and like camp with a 12-year-old kid when you're 18 years old. Like for some
reasons. A Man Scouts for like it's like the
there is something called the Venture Crew in some areas, and that's geared more towards like older teens or young adults. And it is co-ed. So like, you know, there are issues with that, of course, but it's more or less the same thing. And then usually if you're really involved in it and you like it, you'll stay on as like an assistant scoutmaster and you'll help out the groups.
Did you ever do Outward Bound or anything like that?
No, I'm assuming that's like somewhat similar to the Venture Crew, but what is that?
Outward Bound is, I'm trying to think about how to describe it. It's like, depending on what your definition of Adventure Crew was, or was it Venture Crew or Adventure Crew?
It was just Venture Crew, but they would go on adventures.
Oh, Venture Crew. Oh, okay. So I did hear it right. So yeah, essentially you just pick like a theme, I guess. It's like a getaway, but not a fun getaway. It's like, oh, the sailing Outward Bound. You go on a ship, you depart from a harbor, mm-hmm. and you kind of just sail and like rough it for 2 weeks or whatever, to a month. I don't really know.
Oh, like on the ocean.
Yeah, or you go in the woods. You go to like the woods of Maine and you just live in the woods for 2 weeks. And a part of the Outward Bound experience is this thing called a solo, I guess. And I forget the amount of time. I want to say it's 24 to 48 hours. It could be even longer. I'll have to double check after this. But like my buddy Chuck would go on Outward Bound twice or once a summer usually. And he would be gone for like a month or so, and he would just be on a sailboat or like, you know, in the woods. And he would describe his solos where like you had nothing, you had the bare minimum for supplies. You're basically just, it's survival camp basically for whatever scenario you pick. I'm sure they have like winter theme ones, like not winter theme, but like, you know, cold weather theme ones, like tundra theme ones, desert theme ones, like sailing theme ones, woods themed ones. Everglades theme swamp ones.
This is awesome. That sounds so cool though. Like
I
love
it's like
all
an organization.
Yeah, I'm looking at it now. They had a TV show on Discovery Kids that I'm now sort of remembering. Like in the late 90s, early 2000s, they had a series that was sort of based on this program. That looks like fun. I wish I could have done
it. It just seems like Naked and Afraid to me. You know that show, Naked and Afraid. It's just that.
Yeah, man.
Except minus the nakedness, normally.
That's so cool. I always wanted to go on like a sea scouting trip, which is sort of like their like the Outward Bound sea trips, I guess. Because there was like a Boy Scout of America branch called the Sea Scouts, and that was like co-ed as well, but it was open to like all kids, and it was just like learning how to sail, you know, knots and lashings, just like you'd learn anywhere else, but actually putting them to use with sails and water.
Do you know knots?
I know less than I used to. I can still tie a square knot. I can do a bowline. I can do a one-handed bowline.
So you do knots.
Yeah, yeah.
I
know
short
some,
answer.
I know some, but not as many as I used to. I mean, I used to know like dozens of knots. I probably know less than five.
I feel like every time I see my dad, and when I don't see him, like I'll get a text randomly every like 2 months, just being like, you should get into a knot tying course. And he's been doing that. He's been saying that to me seriously for the past like 10 to 15 years. And I've ignored him every time. And I know that the way I'm going to die is going to be because I can't tie a knot properly to save my life. And I'm going to die because of that. I'm going to die knowing that I ignored my father's advice.
Why is he saying that though? Why is that so important to him?
I just feel like there are times in your life that you must need to tie a knot. And it like, I can't really think of many in my life in New York City, but it's going to come down to that. It's going to come down. My life is going to hang in the balance of knowing how to tie a knot. I even downloaded an app, a knot tying app, on my iPad to just like practice in my spare time. And then I'm like, oh, I don't have rope. So what am I going to do it with? Like a
your shoelaces,
like a
man.
Lightning cable.
Shoelaces.
I'll use lightning cables. That'd be fine. Oh man, my brother took it seriously though. My brother absolutely did the knot tying classes. He knows them all, and he has like, you know, the diagram up on the wall of all the famous knots, you know, like the best of the knots,
like
the knot hall of fame,
the Jeff Goldblum plaqued knot set that you can buy at the Knot store in Portlandia.
That's a thing?
Oh, you haven't seen that skit?
No, I haven't.
Oh man. Yeah. Just look up the Knot store, Portlandia. It's absolutely hilarious. But yeah, your brother put that to use though. Like, he's a traveler. He's probably used those knots in context.
As a fisherman, yeah, he's probably definitely used that. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, the only time I can think of knots ever coming in handy was when I was like trying to empty out my parents' house back in like 2009 or so. And like, we had to get rid of this giant refrigerator. It wasn't even a refrigerator. It was a stand up, freezer, mm-hmm. probably, you know, like 400 pounds or so, like 6 feet tall, maybe 5.5, 6 feet tall. And the people that came to pick it up from Craigslist were just like these college bros in a Jeep. And they're like, oh, I don't really think about how to get this freezer into this Jeep. And my buddy Chuck came over, the one who I told you went on Outward Bound. And he just like, he's like, I know my knots. And basically just rigged up this system immediately, probably like with less than like 2 minutes forethought, you know, like it didn't take him long to figure out how he was going to get this freezer secured inside this open top Jeep. And he tied this thing, secured it, and they drove back to like, I don't know, East Boston with this thing. And it was fine. And I was like, wow.
Did he supply the rope?
No, the kids brought it. The college dudes brought it. And that was actually really creepy because I said to the dudes, I'm like, oh, you guys, college guys, just, you know, need a freezer? And they're like, meat. We got a lot of meat. We got a lot of meat. And I'm just like, no, you guys are all like, you're running like a body parts organization here. Like, there has to be something sketchy going on that these college bros are just like, oh, we have a ton of meat that we need to freeze immediately. Let's just go and grab this freezer on Craigslist for free.
I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt, and I'm just going to assume that they are the house on the block that likes to throw parties, and they're not just like regular parties. They like to cook. They do their grilling.
I guess the frat boy aesthetic would make sense with the party boy aesthetic and the need for meat aesthetic. Do you feel the need for meat?
All the time. Pretty much
party
constantly.
Kappa Lambda Chi.
I'm sorry? Excuse you?
Go party at Kappa Lambda Chi.
Oh.
That's the fraternity I made up for them.
Oh, okay. Frats. Yeah. I took no interest in that. Had no frats in my first college. And
Because they weren't allowed or because they...
Because I went to a two-year tech college where the clubs were literally about cutting wood. Like we had a chainsaw club which would compete. I guess you could say it was a team. I don't know. I never saw it happen, but they would cut discs at speed in competition. Like that was one of the main sports in my school.
I feel like your everyday carry would be popular at that kind of school, and your everyday carry would be like a chainsaw.
My everyday carry would have been laughed at there. Like, they'd be like, oh, you need a first aid kit? You need a bigger knife. That's what you need.
No, they would think it's totally cool.
Where's your chewing tobacco? Like,
I bet fidget spinners would go over well at a technical school.
Remember when those were a thing?
Fidget spinners?
Yeah.
I mean, that was last summer that they were like, the plastic ones were all the rage. Mm-hmm. But the ones that Aaron deals with are like real deal. Like, not for children. You know, she just has like this collection of these things, and she waits for these drops, you know, like they call them drops. Mm-hmm. And it's like it's a thing, you know, like they drop in like 50 of these type of spinners at midnight, and she'll be on her phone at like, she'll wake up at midnight, and I'll be like, what are you doing? And she's like, there's a drop, just go back to sleep. And I'm like, okay, I'm just going to ignore this part of my life or part of our lives.
That's crazy. It's like shoe culture, you know, but for the dorky folks who like little gadgets.
Yeah, I think you would really get into it, actually. Yeah. Once I show you her Instagram, you're going to be like, oh, no, I'm into this really big.
No, I believe you when you say that, so I'm going to ask you that you refrain from sending that to me. I can't afford that.
You bought a toy recently, didn't you?
I did. Yeah, I did. It's unfortunate, but it's really cool.
How long has it been since... we're talking Star Wars toys here, nothing weird, like you're kinky. It's just...
I don't think anybody would assume that. I don't think anybody would assume that. But no, it
know.
Is a Star Wars toy because that's what I have a collection of. I haven't... Prior to this new toy store opening up randomly in my town, I hadn't bought a toy in probably like 7 or 8 months. Maybe longer, honestly. Like, it may have been before Christmas last year, because I got a couple of Pop figures for Christmas, but I guess I didn't buy those myself, and I can't think of anything I've bought since. But I saw this Bantha toy at the store, and I just had to get it. Like, it's not in a box or anything. Like, it's out of box. It has a little Tusken Raider that's basically just like bungeed to it, and I don't know. It's like somewhat realistic because it has the fur, so it's not just like one of those like 70s plastic right on top toys that you'd see with the Power Rangers or I guess any of the Star Wars toys. It's not just like a ship, but it has the hair, which gives it a level of authenticity that I couldn't pass up for $25. So
is it real hair?
I didn't ask that question. I'm assuming not. It's just like, you know, fake toy hair. I don't know where it comes from. It's probably synthetic, but I guess I can't be too sure. It's cool.
It's real hair.
It's,
you know,
it's
what hair. It is. I bet it's hair dyed. It's my hair dyed from like 2 summers ago when I cut all my hair off and donated it to Pantene Beautiful Lengths.
Who knows if they're doing that stuff? They're putting it in toys. That'd be really creepy.
I wonder what happened. I wrote like a little note with my hair, and I was like, please tell me what you do with my hair, please. And they did not write back. They sent a thank you note for sure.
I don't think I wonder how many people have ever asked to get a follow-up about the hair. Like, you get that if you donate money to any of those, you know, those call-in donation lines for kids in Africa and whatnot. Like, they'll follow up with you. Who knows? I don't know if they're telling the truth or not. Like, but hair? Like, do you really want to know what people are doing with your hair?
Well, I mean, like, I just wanted to know that it wasn't going to go in the garbage. I took good care of my hair when it was long. My hair is like just a regular men's haircut right now, I guess. It's like a short haircut. But, you know, 2 years ago, my hair was like probably a couple feet.
It was,
you know, like
it was luscious
down in the middle. It was down to the middle of my back, basically. And I would wear it up. But I just wanted long hair for a second. And then at some point I'm like, oh, if I don't grow this out like 9 inches at least, then it's going to be just like I grew hair for no reason and then just cut it off and threw it in the trash. If I grow it to 9 inches or whatever, then it's eligible for these programs and I can donate it. So I took care of it. Like, I made sure I banded it properly on like the top and the bottom to make sure it didn't get loose. And I had at least the right length, and Aaron hacked my hair off for me. And I sealed it up in its plastic bags, each one individually, and mailed it out to this program and got a thank you note like a few weeks later. But I really just wanted to know that, like, where it went, if it went to a wig, or I think the discards either go in the trash or they get used for like testing, like test strips for like their dyes. I would be even okay with that. I would have been okay with if my hair had gone to test strips, like, you know, just to know that it didn't end up in the trash for 3 years of growth, you know, just so I know I didn't look bad for 3 years for nothing. That's really my biggest concern, that my vanity is not in vain.
I'm sure it's put to good use. I'm sure that there is a very nice young child that is wearing your hair right now and is very thankful. Or Guy Fieri is thankful somewhere for your hair being used to test his latest frosted tips dye or whatever.
I thought you were going to say, like, Guy Fieri is throwing your hair into his hamburger mix right now. He's making hamburger patties out of your hair.
Gross. How do we get here? I don't know how we got here, but weapons, that's right. Yeah, so that's interesting. Now I know what to get you for Christmas, since you're
not brass knuckles.
Oh, come on. Are they allowed in New York?
I can't. No, definitely not. We don't allow firearms in the city. You can't drive through New York City with a firearm like in your trunk. Like, it just can't happen. Like, you have to have like a concealed carry, and
for brass knuckles permit.
Well, no, not for brass knuckles. No, those are just not allowed. I mean, there's no reason to have a brass knuckle except to hurt somebody. You can't be like, oh, I'm going to the brass knuckle range just to, you know, knock a few like targets down. You can't say that. You can't be like, oh, self defense. You know, like, no, if you have brass knuckles, you're just like, I mean,
you're,
I guess you could claim self defense,
but
like,
you have to be expecting a fight.
Yeah, or like, yeah, you can't claim you're hunting with brass knuckles. There's no like turkeys that are going to be taken down by you. You can just go out punching.
That'd be cruel.
Yeah,
going hunting. No, New York with doesn't brass knuckles, allow. That's just not right.
Nothing fun is allowed in New York. except when it is allowed in New, or when it, but it still ends up here anyway.
Hmm. Okay. Well, I'll save that for when you move.
We have to pick our states carefully if I move.
Oh, so all right. Aaron's out of town. We've established that much.
Yeah. What's going on with you?
Yeah. What is up with you? Like, I guess you're left at home with the dog. And when you were talking about a daily carry, like, I thought you were talking about the dog, because oftentimes she will carry the dog to work.
Yeah, she does. Yeah, no, this, it used to be her everyday carry. Her place of employment her new place of employment as of last year does not allow doggies.
Oh, that's no fun. I thought Olivia went to a meeting like yesterday.
Oh, she definitely did, but she was not supposed to be there. Oh,
okay, so that's
they snuck her in for just, she was working from home and she forgot something at work, so she just went in for a few minutes for a meeting and to pick up her thing. Oh. And the dog made it in.
Is she quiet? The dog.
Yes. Definitely. The only time she gets aggravated is when there's like another dog. She doesn't play well with others. She's a very solitary dog.
That's good.
She's yippy when another dog comes around, or just downright like aggressive. And it's, you know, something we've been working with for a while. But
oh, interesting.
Yeah, she looks so nice, doesn't she?
She does. Super sweet. Those big eyes. She just looks like a little cartoon.
She's passed out in her bed right behind me right now.
That's good. Well, you get
for
you fed her and took her for a walk.
This is we're talking about like a 12-pound dachshund, a wiener dog
that has 18,000 followers on Instagram. This is not an ordinary dog.
They're dogs with millions of followers. It's not a big deal. But yeah, she's
friends with
these
dogs. So like, she's in the crowd. Cute.
She has like a posse of famous dogs that she's a part of. Sure.
If anybody's familiar with Harlow and Sage, or Harlow and any of their other fosters, I'm not sure which of the dogs are still alive, because I think Harlow or Sage or both of them are no longer living. Is that right?
Sage is no longer with us. That's on right. This planet.
Okay, so Harlow and the others.
Harlow's the Weimaraner. Very beautiful Weimaraner. And yeah.
They're all beautiful dogs.
Yeah. And then there's Reese in Indiana. And oh, what's the new one's name? I forget.
Well, they foster now. They like foster until they find new homes, and then they.
Yeah.
Well, the best part of this is that they start new Instagrams for these dogs, and then the Instagrams go with these dogs when they're adopted.
Yeah, that's what. Do you follow? This is turning into an Instagram dog conversation. But like, yeah, do you follow like Jade and River? Their old fosters from like a year or so ago.
I don't know.
They were found like in a box.
I follow Deuce.
Deuce, I don't know Deuce.
Deuce is one of the early ones. He was a healer, but this is totally uninteresting. But if you like dogs, like Harlow and Sage and Harlow and Foster's, they're like really good. They're good accounts to like find great dogs you'll want to see Instagram owners for the rest of their lives.
It's really, the owners are really great photographers. So, you know, mm-hmm. that really is what separates it from any other person taking bad pictures of their dog with like their cell phone camera or their webcam or something like that. It's just, the photographer makes a huge difference a lot of the time. And when you have a nice camera and you have a really great eye, I think it helps with the Instagram followers.
Yeah. But, yeah. Okay. So Olivia is not a normal dog. She is a very well taken care of and impossibly well photographed dog, but that's cool. What are you gonna do home alone with the pup for, I'm assuming, just the weekend?
I'm working. Yeah. I work in like a retail environment pretty much, so it's just like my schedule is just every day, you know, just off hours, normal hours. It just, I have Saturday off, but then I'm working Thursday, Friday, Sunday, so it's just there's, I won't be with this dog for most of the day. Our neighbor is kind enough to walk her when she's not here.
Oh, that's nice.
When Aaron's not here on the weekend, so. Very grateful for that.
Yeah. Speaking of retail jobs, guess who just quit theirs?
Oh, man, you did it.
I finally did it, yeah. And it was brought to my attention when I did that I'll be 4 days shy of exactly 5 years.
You couldn't have just given them the last 4 days?
No, I barely wanted to give them the 2 weeks.
How many years was it?
Five.
So I bet like some good benefits kick in then, like some like extra accrual vacation time or something.
No, I cashed out the vacation time when I stepped down from management. As you might recall, I left management to go back to school full time and stayed on at a part-time capacity.
Oh, right. So then you don't get vacation time.
Yeah. Well, I did, and I cashed out like 200 hours of it, so I got a pretty good paycheck with that. But
that's nice.
Yeah. No, all I really got this year was basically a little fuck you from I guess the accounting department when they decided not to give us the retro pay for our merit increase.
And oh,
yeah, that sucks. Yeah, that sucks. But they it's okay. They placated me by sending me my 5-year anniversary plaque a couple of months early.
Oh wow, that was considerate of them.
Yeah, it's really shitty. Like it's basically a shadow box with like the company logo done up as a like a varsity letter.
I think mine did that too.
Yeah,
when I got mine.
I don't know. It's just like they usually wait until you hit your 5 years, but they did it like basically 9 months early, just to soften the blow of not getting our merit increase.
Hmm.
Like, sorry, you're not getting the extra $400. Here's a shitty plaque.
Enjoy.
Yeah, but no,
I sent mine to my dad.
Oh, really?
So I was just like, yeah, I was like, I have no desire to look at this reminder of my shitty job. So.
Yeah. Oh, maybe I should send mine to my dad too. He still lives in the house where there is a literal hallway that's like dedicated to my achievements. So maybe I can send it to him to put it with my Boy Scout awards.
Oh man, is your dad's house like a museum?
No, I wouldn't say that. Like, there are some pictures in the wall, but after my parents split up, you know, I wouldn't say that he even redecorated. There were just like a couple of places in the walls where it was weird enough for it to be bare that he replaced it with something else. Like, I think he put up a couple of like Audubon illustrations. He's very outdoorsy. So most of the living room is covered with deer heads anyway. So he would just toss up like outdoorsy photographs or scans or prints or whatever. But yeah, I get one hallway. Like, there's one hallway that's dedicated to me. But yeah. Yeah. I quit a job, and I feel good about it.
That's so great, especially that you feel good about it too.
Yeah,
I mean, no remorse looking back. No,
no,
no. Like, I'm gonna miss it. I'm gonna miss these people or anything like that.
Not really. Like, there have been a number of opportunities for me to quit in years past, and I definitely, I probably should have left when I stepped down from management and went back to school full time. I could have found something a little closer to home. Like, this job was about 30 minutes away, which isn't really that far, but when you're driving, you know, it's gas money and it's an hour that you're spending on the road. I probably could have and probably should have quit then. But at the time, me leaving would have made it really difficult for some of the people that I've worked with for a really long time who were still there. Like, you know, I would have put them out. So I stayed on, and they offered me, you know, pretty decent pay for part-time in my area, just because I was formerly a manager. So I had that extra experience that they could still utilize without having to pay me a full salary. That kind of kept me stuck there for a while, because again, like, if I would have left that job, I would have had to take like at least a $5 pay decrease to work basically anywhere else in the area, which I probably would have been fine, but it would have hurt. Like, I wouldn't be able to pay on my loans while I'm still in school, and, you know, just money stuff. So I probably could have left, but over time, it kept getting more and more uncomfortable. Like, the person that replaced me was somebody that I recommended not be hired to begin with. They hired her anyway.
Why did you not recommend her?
Oh, well, they were a manager in several other stores in the center already. So she had a reputation around, and I was well aware of the reputation. Didn't know her personally, but I had heard enough that I knew that when she inevitably applied, because she would, it's a brand that she's wanted to work for a long time, that she would apply, and she would act perfectly nice. She would probably, you know, it's going to look great on paper. She's going to interview really well. But just from what I know about her personality and her management styles, like, she would not be a good fit for the company. But, you know, with me leaving, they established that they needed to get somebody in the door. So they hired her as my replacement. And then the person who hired her left the store the next month to take a position back towards where they were originally from. So they hired in this person that I knew wouldn't be good for the store. They left us hanging, and it's just been it's been a shitstorm ever since. I've never seen somebody skate on such thin ice for so long. But, you know, I stuck it out for a while because the pay was okay, and it was a job that I knew, and the hours were basically, they fit perfectly with my schedule. They were very early in the morning, which suck, but it was nice to get the work out of the way before starting my day with school and my other jobs and whatnot. So it fit, but over time, the personality of that manager just kind of, they drove away all of the good talent and all the people that I liked. So it made it a lot easier as time went on to say, you know what? I don't need to be here either. I don't have to stay here to placate anybody or to, you know, hang out with people that I enjoy working with anymore. So yeah, I guess really the only thing I'll miss is having those early morning shifts, which allow me to listen to like 8 hours worth of podcast before 10 a.m. That's
how do you do that? How do you fit that many podcasts in before?
Well, Mike,
in that amount of time, what? How early are you starting?
I start at 5, so I have like 5 hours.
And you do 8 hours of podcast in 5 hours?
Yeah, and I guess that's a good segue into our main topic for the evening, which is podcasts. Yeah. Yeah, I listen to a lot of podcasts.
I just wanted to keep on everyday carry for the rest of this thing.
I think that would actually be an interesting topic conversation later. We can add that to the list, but I'm not prepared for that. Yeah, but tonight, if it's okay with you, I'd like to talk a little bit about podcasts, just because I think we've been talking about it recently, and my habits have been changing a little more over the past couple weeks. So,
We have to talk about why our habits change in addition to how our habits have changed, because it is interesting to track those changes and what's going on in your life and how it affects podcasting and why it's important that it affects podcasting it sucks.
Yeah, no, definitely. Like that. Okay. Let's just start there. Like, first of all, how often do you listen to podcasts? Like, how much time do you say that you probably spend on a given week listening to podcasts?
Okay. It just depends. I could probably do the math exactly. But I can tell you also why it changed. So currently I'm doing 1 hour, I guess about 45 minutes to work, mm-hmm. 45 minutes back. So an hour and a half a day at the very least. Sometimes more if I need to move around to another location, you know, if I'm not going straight home, if I'm doing something. So I would say an hour and a half to two and a half hours a day.
Okay.
1.5 to 2.5 hours a day. But that's not how many hours of podcasts I'm listening to.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Yeah, we can get into I want to talk about play speeds too. And because that's been something that you've literally been bugging me about this for like 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But okay, so you're listening to, like, in a given week, how many hours do you spend listening to shows, and how many shows are you subscribed to? I just kind of want to like figure out what that number looks like.
Well, I'm looking at it right now in my podcatcher, which is called Overcast. So let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I'm subscribed now to over like probably 30 podcasts, I guess. You know, like between 25 and 30 podcasts, just eyeballing it right now.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Like these are ones that aren't just like in your podcatcher. These are ones that you're actually listening to.
Yes. There are only two or three podcasts in my podcatcher that are not subscription based.
Okay. So these are ones that you maybe just like dip into when you're interested?
They're ones I want to commit to, but they're ones like I have Ear Hustle right now. It's not subscribed, but I've listened to the first episode when I had like a free minute and I really want to continue it. But I just, you know, my regular subscriptions are just too much to handle at the moment. How do you pare down your podcasts?
Oh man, with a lot of thought and consideration. Like it's
you probably just stop, right?
Yeah, usually there are some that I still let come through, but I think about them less like it's something that I need to complete, because the completionist mentality for me is very strong in podcasting. Like I feel like I have to listen to everything, but I can't obviously I can't do that. Like, there's just no way. Like, even listening at the speeds that I listen to and how often I spend listening to podcasts, I just can't. I mean, I don't actually know how many podcasts I'm subscribed to right now. It's probably, I know that I'm subscribed to 101 feeds, but that doesn't mean that I'm listening to all those. And I don't even let all of those like come into my playlist. Like, a lot of those are pared down, but I would say that I'm probably subscribed to and see episodes for probably like 60 shows a week.
And you manage to listen to all of them?
Well, not all of them publish like every week. So you've got like the every 2 weeks, every once in a while. I have some that are like just once a month. I don't subscribe to like any daily shows right now. So I don't.
That's too much.
Yeah. A lot of those are really short. So it's something that I'm like interested in, but just with how much I listen to other stuff, I just can't fit it in. So I use a combination of Overcast and Breaker. I'm kind of transitioning over to Breaker. I've been using Overcast for a really long time. I'm just curious. Look this up while I kind of look through my app. Look up your smart speed savings in Overcast. I like to.
I don't use smart savings.
What?
I don't use. No, I don't.
Wow, that's crazy.
I use high speeds. Like I listen at 2x on a couple shows.
But you don't trim silences.
I don't trim silence, no. If I trim silence at 2x speed, then I wouldn't be able to understand anything as opposed to anything to what I'm, you know, catching now.
Holy cow. Wow.
Like if I hear WTF, like Mark Maron's WTF at 1x speed, I think something's wrong with my phone or like the audio doesn't sound right. I need to be listening to Mark Maron at 2x normal speed.
Yeah.
Number one, to get through it quicker, because
they're long.
Feel like I told this to my group of friends when we were talking about podcast listening speeds and in our group chat, and their reaction is like, oh, just like, that's insane. That is the definition of insanity, is listening to Mark Maron at 2x normal speed.
No.
And I get it, but like, I think the interviews are good and I just want to get through it.
Yeah. Well, and you can save a lot of time with Mark Maron by skipping like the first 10 minutes of ads and front.
Yeah. The ads are easy to skip, and that's something I fast forward through all the time. Do you listen to ads? Let me rephrase. Is there a show that makes you want to listen to the ads?
I listen to every single ad on the Crooked Media podcast. I don't know why, because they're all the same, but it's funny because they basically attack the people writing the ads constantly, and I love that. You just never know what you're going to get. You're always going to get some good jokes from John Lovett. And I generally listen to the ones from Harmontown, unless they're just like replaying an old recording. If it's the same exact ad I've heard before, I'll skip it. But if they do something different every time, I'll listen to it, just because you never know what you're going to get.
Wow. Yeah. I used to think, I don't know, before I started running out of time, I would listen to most ads in like 99% invisible.
Mm-hmm.
I think Roman Mars even bragged about how well his ads do, you know, version of like braggadocio. But like, it was just like, it was because his ad reads are so genuine and seem not off the cuff, but like, confident. I guess his confidence in delivering his ads.
And probably less scripted. I don't listen to that show, but
I think he just knows how to talk in a conversational way that makes it work. But after a while, you know, because I think he uses dynamic advertising, where he just inserts an ad and it covers his back catalog or whatever, depending on where you are. But I would listen to each and every one, because I thought like, oh wow, he put the effort into writing this copy, or like, you know, rehearsing this and delivering it in a certain way, and it was interesting enough, you know. But like the Maron podcast ads, I can't listen to that anymore. You know, I can't listen to stamps.com.
Yeah.
I can't listen to him hawk, you know, like
the latest Comedy Central special or.
Yeah. It's.
Yeah. No, I get that. Yeah. I think you can save. There's a lot of podcast time to be saved with fast forwarding through ads, but it blows my brain that you don't use smart speed, because it's just like such a good feature. Like, whether it be smart speed or skip silences, a lot of apps have these now. It's a huge time saver. Like, Overcast will track this for you. Breaker does it as well. I have not been using Breaker as long, so the number isn't as impressive. But Overcast tells me that I've saved 312 hours just on smart speed. That's not taking into consideration like speed adjustments alone. Like 312 hours I've saved by using that feature. And it all it does is it trims the silences between speech like that one down to something listenable.
I think that silences are important, though.
They can be, and you can turn a lot of these apps will allow you to turn them off for specific shows, and that's something that I do for play speed as well. Like, you know, a show that's like focused on music, you don't want to listen to that at 2x speed or like skip silences on that because it's gonna change how the music is played. But on most like two dudes talking shows, is it really that important? Like, would you say that the space between our words on this show is really that important? Because if anything, I think it's just gonna like improve the show, because most of the time if we're not saying something for 2 seconds, it's because we can't think of what to say next.
I think that for this type of show specifically, you and I, that which has a very low listenership, and you and I are not anybody famous with anything of particular interest to say, you know, like when I'm listening to Marin and he asks somebody a question and they, you know, granted this is on 2x speed, so I'm like getting a relative pause, you know. But let's say I'm listening to This American Life, better example, and Ira asks somebody like a weird question, or the interviewer asks the subject a weird question. Like, I think the pause before an answer is so important. Like, as somebody who edits shows, you know, like leaving in a pause is a conscious decision, and to turn on skip silences or you know, like smart speed, it just disregards it. So like, yeah, if the majority of your podcasts are like us, and like, you know, the actual words are what are important and not how we're saying the words, or like, or there's no gravity to it. I guess if there's gravity to the subject matter, like if we're talking about something really intense, then yeah, I want that pause to be there because it shows that I'm having difficulty saying what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
And whereas, you know, that makes sense in a show like Marin or This American Life, because there are a lot of times using heavy subjects, and for like tech podcasts and things like that, no one's like giving like a heavy weighted pause before they're discussing, you know, what the rumor mill is saying this week about Apple products or whatever, you know?
No, I think you're right. I think though, I don't know, having used skip silences for, I can't remember when Marco first introduced it into his app, but it's probably been at least 3 years, right? So I've been using it for a while, and I feel like I've kind of grown accustomed to where those spaces would be, because I think somebody who comes out of a pause is going to speak in a certain way. And I think you can sort of still picture that in your mind, even if you're listening it. Like when you're listening to something super fast, like when you're listening to speech super fast, it changes the inflection in a certain way just by tightening it up. And I still feel that I can like parse out what the emotion is behind the speech. I don't feel like it's changing the weight behind their words just because it's pulling out the silences or trimming down the amount of time that is spent listening to what they're saying. I think it's still there, but I think that's maybe something that I've just grown more accustomed to, having used the feature for so long, for 312 hours. So you listen to, you're listening to things at like 2x speed all the time, or are you?
No, very specific ones. And also depends how far behind in my queue I am.
Yeah.
Like,
well, I don't even remember like, you listening to things that fast at all. You used to give me hell. When did this change?
No, WTF is 100% on, that's on double speed all the time forever. What else am I listening to on double speed? It's like, I don't know. It's if I love the show, then I listen to Here's a Thing with Alec Baldwin at 2x speed. Basically anything where sound design doesn't go into it. Like Marin's show sounds like shit. Alec Baldwin's show just sounds like an NPR interview and with Miles Davis in the background, you know, like, what else? Like, I listen to my friend's comedy podcast at 2x speed, mostly because each one is like an hour long and I, you know, I just want to get through it. You know, but the thing is like anybody who hears me say, I just want to get through it about a podcast is just going to respond to me like, don't listen to it at all. If this is like a burden on you to get through this podcast, don't listen. And you're definitely partially right. You know, like you're right. Is it
FOMO? Like, is it that completionist mentality where you're like, I have to make time for this?
I guess. Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's anything else you can call it besides that, because, I mean, like, yeah, you should be able to skip any podcast. It's not a serial, you know, like 99% Invisible is not serialized. You know, there's maybe one or two two-parter episodes or something like that, mm-hmm. but it's not like there's a continuity to the podcast where they're going to call something back and I'm going to miss out on it. It's usually just things that I want to learn. You fear you're missing out on some kind of knowledge or some conversation point to share with somebody who also listens to the show. Or like you're going to get some obscure reference 6 months down the line when somebody says something that happened in Serial or whatever. That is serialized, so I guess that's a bad example. But, you know, it's... I don't know. It's like just trivia. And I guess the definition of trivia is just stuff that one would not need to know in everyday life. Mm-hmm. It's trivia. I guess that's what podcasts are, mostly trivial. You know, you could argue like maybe the Daily, like the New York Times Daily Show, that's not trivia because that's the news. That's your briefing for the day about what happened yesterday leading into the morning. But yeah, I don't know. I should just be able to swipe left, and I'm sure there's some kind of counter conditioning or like, you know, podcast therapy that exists out there that's like, yeah, just delete your entire list, stop listening to podcasts for 1 week and don't feel like you have to catch up.
Oof.
That yeah, you're getting shivers just thinking about it. Like,
yeah, that's wild. I mean, I don't know what I'd do. Like, podcasts fill such a huge void for me, and there's something I actually heard that was somewhat profound from a guest on Harmontown today. It was just somebody they pulled up from the crowd, and just they were kind of giving their feedback on Harmontown because Harmontown's just hit their like 300 episode landmark, which is insane. And the host Dan Harmon is sort of looking for feedback, like, you know, what are you as fans expecting from us going forward? Like, we've done this for a while, like, we want your feedback. Like, we very rarely hear, you know, anything positive about the show. It feels like we're like running through what made us special. Like, if we're going to keep doing this, what should we do? And this audience member came up and, you know, was just telling him, like, the things that I really like about your show are like the top of it. When you have some things that are somewhat prepared and you're just like talking about the things that are probably mundane in your life, but are still really interesting to us. As opposed to, you know, some of the more improvisational stuff, like the raps that he does or whatever. But what really hit me was when they were talking about what podcasts are for them, like they listen to shows like Harmontown so they don't feel as lonely. And I wouldn't say that I'm a lonely person, but it's like there is that weird just silence that just makes me anxious. So if I'm working on homework, it's not a big deal because my mind's occupied doing this thing. If I'm not working on homework, if I'm like just sitting around at home, chances are I'm going to turn on a TV show or a podcast. Like, podcasts aren't something I can like just listen, like sit and listen to. It's something that I have to be active doing, but because I'm so often driving, like I commute to school an hour both ways each day. That's time. When I'm at work and it's 5 o'clock in the morning and nobody wants to have a conversation, that's time. Like, that's time I need to fill with something. And that's why podcasts are like such a huge part of my life. And that's why I listen to so many of them. But it does reach a point where it's like, I can't, it's actually stressing me out more to have this many shows because I can't handle listening to all of that. There's just no time. I would just have to go do something to make time for that podcast. And that's a tough thing. So that's why I've been paring back lately, because I'm not going to have that job in the morning. So I need to, I need to trim like 10 hours of podcasts, which is basically 20 hours of podcasts if you don't listen twice the speed. But does that compute with like how you listen to podcasts? Is it always just something, you know, that's tied to your commute, or is it something that you can like set time for?
If I was to set time for it, it would have to be in the same way that I would do any leisure activity, mm-hmm. you know, like watching Netflix or something like that. And I don't do that. So yeah, I guess I would say it's just a way to combat, you know, to kill time, I guess,
mm-hmm.
but feel constructive while you're doing it, or feel like you're trying to learn something.
Yeah.
I guess it's like the modern day, like, you know, reading a newspaper or something like that.
Or a book.
Minus the news. Yeah, well, that's the thing is that, like, so I moved to New York about 7 years ago, and there, when I got here, I was terrified to do anything on the train. I felt like I, you know, I'm, you know, I had a lot of preconceived notions about New York City, and I was living in not a rough part of town, but like not a great part of town, of Brooklyn specifically. And I was just kind of like, oh, I need to be vigilant on the train and aware of my surroundings at all times. I need to not listen to anything while I'm walking.
And I also didn't have surroundings. Like,
yeah, I moved here also as a musician that like didn't have a steady job. So like my commutes were, I didn't have a commute, you know? So I didn't have to worry about how to occupy my time during the day. Like I got into This American Life because I genuinely loved hearing it. And like, I would put it on before bed. I would fall asleep to it. That was my first podcast. And I think a lot of people can say it's their first podcast. But that was the first thing that kept me company, because I genuinely love the stories. Because like a professor of mine was a subject in one. That's how I really got into it. And realized how effective Ira Glass was at connecting. And so, yeah, I guess that is where like the passion element came into it. But that slowly faded away when I got a regular job. I still hadn't engaged in it fully. But like my commutes started with, like I didn't want to have headphones in on a commute because I wanted to be able to pay attention again. I had that weird like hypervigilance going on still. Mm-hmm. And eventually I moved into ebooks I got a hand-me-down Kindle and started just, you know, downloading a whole bunch of books from wherever and started reading them on the train. And I was regularly spending 2 hours a day reading. And that was the most I probably ever read consistently besides like college, for pleasure at least. And at some point I just subscribed to like 5 podcasts and then realized I had to keep up, you know, with these certain podcasts. And that's when my commutes became that. And that was only probably like 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm. That's when I started getting big into it too. And I mean, I think that has a lot to do with the boom and the interest that came around the same time that Serial came around. You know,
I was just going to say that Serial. Yeah. It was Serial.
Serial
was when Serial when Serial became a conversation topic at parties. That's when everybody started getting like the podcast fever. Yeah, and
I got the bug for sure. I mean, so many people that I know that listen to podcasts now started then. And I mean, it's not that I started listening that much before. I mean, like This American Life, of course, is, I feel like that is a first for a lot of people because they probably have heard it before, just not as a podcast. Like I used to listen to This American Life on the radio, you know, it's a program. So,
oh my gosh. Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember I was on tour and, it was just me and one other person in the car touring together. And we were just like fading in between radio stations. And suddenly you hear this thing come on and it's like a really graphic story of like, sexual molestation or something like that. And, and we're like, oh my God, what are we, it's like a dramatic telling of these events. And I was like, what are we listening to on FM radio right now? And we realized, oh, it's NPR. And, you know, you start to realize like, oh, this is a thing. And then you find out it's not just something that you get to listen to one day a week in whatever area you're in. It's something you can listen to all the time. And there's, 600 back episodes of this thing. Like,
yeah,
it's a completionist nightmare.
Yeah, it is. And there's no way
600 hours, 600 something hours of content.
I mean, it's all interesting stuff. And like whenever they replay an episode, I'm not bummed because even if I've heard it before, like it's probably been a long time. So it's probably worth listening to again. But the whole NPR thing, like when you listen to stuff on NPR as a kid, or at least when I did, like I listen to NPR all the time, whether it be with my parents or my grandparents. Like I grew up on This American Life or Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, or, you know, the stories
from Prairie Home Companion.
Prairie Home Companion, I was going to say, like Lake Wobegon, whatever the hell that show was called. I loved that stuff growing up. And I think that probably played a lot into my early podcast listening, because This American Life was definitely one of them, and Harmontown was a big thing for that. And then of course, like that's about the time I was getting into technology stuff, so ATP and The Talk Show and those related shows. And those starter shows, it's weird to think about those, because I think about how many of them I still listen to, like the ones that I first subscribed to, and a lot of them aren't active anymore. Like the music ones that I listen to are no longer active. A lot of them I got pretty fed up with and I just unsubscribed. The habits have changed, and they've changed just by listening to podcasts. They've changed my entire life. Like that sounds crazy, but they really have. When you really start thinking about the time that you spend on your hobbies, it's like, wow, like that's time you used to spend much differently. I used to spend a lot more time reading books or articles online. I used to spend a lot more time online in general. Like I would be on Facebook or Twitter, you know, having conversations, and because of podcasts, like I feel like I don't have to go to other places to find entertainment. I don't have to go to other places to get my news. Like it all comes through my RSS feeds and through my earbuds. And it's crazy how much time I now spend listening to podcasts where I would have otherwise done other things. Like it gives, I guess in a way it gives me an opportunity to go do, you know, the dishes or take the dog for a walk. Like these are all things that I should do anyway, but it becomes more enjoyable because of the podcast that I have. And I don't have to like look at my phone to do it because it's like a passive thing, but it's just so, it's so strange. Like podcasts really have like changed my world beyond just, you know, working for a company that it's entirely reliant on podcasting and doing podcasts myself. Like every facet of my life in some way has been touched just because I listen to these radio shows on my cell phone. It's so weird. And it's a thing that like my grandparents don't understand, you know, like there are people that are even our age that don't listen to podcasts and would have absolutely no idea what the hell we're talking about. Like why is this such a big deal for you? Like what are podcasts? People don't know. And yet people like us who listen to podcasts, it's like a big deal. It's like a huge part of who we are.
I would say you could say it's a part of who we are because of our, like our desired professions and like what we're doing in our, but really it's just, it defines our free time really. Mm-hmm. Like I don't think of myself as, you know, Mike Comite podcast listener. I think of myself as like podcast editor for sure. And like, but not a listener. And I think if I took a full-time job, which, you know, is like, I'm always gunning for that. But like if I took a full-time job in podcasting, editing or engineering or whatever, I do think my listening would have to go down. Mm-hmm. I don't think I would be able to.
Well, yeah,
I'd have to find a different hobby. You know, like even just doing, I worked on Burnt Toast. It's like a food podcast. Food 52 does it. And I worked on that for 3-4 months and it was exhausting to try and keep up like a listening schedule on that because I would get home, you know, from listening to for an hour on the train to podcasts and then immediately to sit down in an editor's chair after working all day and start cutting up audio and conforming it to that script. And it was just, it was a nightmare.
Well, yeah, like, you can't do anything. Like it's working on a podcast is not like working on an article or something in Photoshop. Like it's, you have to use your ears for what you're doing. So you can't even like have Netflix on in the background because you just can't pay attention to both things. It's impossible.
I feel like, yeah, at a certain point you get to like DEFCON 5 or whatever, you know, like with your podcast queue and you're like, all right, everything is on 2x speed now. And like when you're committing to like This American Life at 2x speed, you know, you have some kind of like issue going on. You're like, oh, I need to get through these podcasts. Like there's like, there are so, I think it's like hoarding almost. Do you know what I mean? Like when my mother's emptying a house now, cause she's getting ready to move. And she is like taking, you know, those, you know, what do you call it? Trendy, like ownership articles, like possession articles that are circulating now being like, you know, how do you tell if it's time to throw something away? If you touch something and it doesn't bring you joy, throw it away or just give it away, you know, responsibly, reuse, recycle. And I definitely take that to heart in terms of possessions. Like if I touch something and I'm like, I need this every second of the day, or if it doesn't like elate me to have it, to know that it's there, then it's gone. Like I have so few creature comforts. I have my computer and like the accessories that come with that, like hard drives and, you know, trackpads or whatever. But like, I don't like Erin has her everyday carry stuff. And the things like her figurines and things like that. Mm. And I look around the place that I'm living now and I have like, I guess a watch on my nightstand, a couple pictures of family members, and that's it. That's all I have in this apartment. You know, I have a guitar in the corner, but that's even something that doesn't bring me a whole lot of joy anymore. So like, I'm not going to throw it away. But so think of that in terms of podcasting, you know, like what brings you joy when it pops into your feed. And I can think of, you know, 2 or 3 podcasts off the top of my head that bring me joy, like This American Life, Radio Lab. I'm like, oh, I like that's something I need to listen to. We Hate Movies, which is funny because it's just a 4 guys talking podcast, but I do get elated when that comes in my feed.
I know, and I, you have do, to listen to it. You text me almost every time.
Listen,
you're like, these guys are so smart.
No, I texted you about Red Letter Media. That's
yeah, but
like, I don't,
man, you sent me them, like, at least a dozen episodes of We Hate Movies in the past year and a half.
Usually when they have to talk about like Solo or, you know, yeah, one of the Star Wars movies. So that's one of them. Heavyweight. Mm. You and I both love Heavyweight.
Love Heavyweight.
Yeah, and that's, well, because, you know why? Because he's like a heavy This American Life contributor. You know, like, that's what he does. Mm-hmm. He was a This American Life guy, and he's just like, he's so
pro. He's like
pro
my favorite This American Life guy.
Yeah, at like audio storytelling. So, you know, like, of course that's something mm-hmm. that's going to bring you joy because of the way he writes and the way he edits and structures his stuff. And his ads are fantastic.
Yeah,
I'll listen to those on, like, he repeats the ads sometimes, but I'll listen to them because I love him and Jorge going back and forth and like doing their stupid banter. So Heavyweight, like, but like, if I look at my feed, you know, like, I could just end the subscriptions now to like half of them. Like, I don't need Alec Baldwin. Mm-hmm. I probably don't need 99% Invisible, even though I enjoy it so much. I enjoy it a little bit, I guess. It's a medium. Tiny Desk I need because I need it to break up the talk shows. I need some injection of music. Maron, honestly, I listen to every single Marc Maron, whether I've heard of the person or not. Some people will only listen if it's like a person that's fascinating to them, and that's a totally legitimately way to, that's a legitimate way to do it. Mm-hmm. But I listen to every single episode because I do honestly feel like the people he's interviewing, they're like people, they're usually older people, you know, like 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, you know, like some people are that old. Sometimes it's like their last interview they give before they die. Like, yeah, some people did that. Like, and I just feel like there's so much to learn from someone because he interviews really successful people, mm-hmm. and not just successful in like, you know, rich or something, like show business people who have like really worked hard, or like film editors or directors or singers, anything really that just worked really hard for their whole lives. And I feel like there's always something to be learned. I remember I came to this realization listening to, it was, must have been like Patricia Arquette, I think. And like, I can't even imagine what she looks like. I don't really even know what Patricia Arquette looks like. But I listened to her podcast and I was like about to delete it. And I was like, you know what? Just, you know, that little like OCD podcast listener in me was like, no, I got to listen to it. And she said something in it that like stuck with me. And I just, you know, it was just her talking about, you know, like forgiving and forgetting with family members or something like that, to that effect. But like, I was glad I listened to it. And I regularly take the advice that these people give, or like these anecdotes they tell, or like their upbringings, and like compare it to my own. And, you know, it helps put things in perspective to listen to somebody who's been a while. Like, the least interesting WTF episodes are ones with young people, like Alana and what's her name? Abby, I think, from what is it called?
No idea.
From Broad City.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Alana. Alana and Abby, right? I found their episode so not interesting. Mm-hmm. Like, despite the level of success they achieved, like, they were just too young to have
perspective,
a lot
and,
to say.
Yeah,
like, who else? Like, even Chris D'Elia, when he was on, like, mm-hmm. I found his episode super boring, and maybe that's what I gained from it, is like to learn, like, oh, like he didn't sound that interesting when he was talking. He was just kind of recounting how much of a screw up he was in New York City, but not in an interesting way, not in a way that made me think he was like a hard worker or anything. And he might be, you know, but he just didn't come across as like someone like that interesting.
Yeah.
So, but the older folks, they have way more to say, I think.
Yeah, for sure. Like, I love, you know, I follow and occasionally listen to Macaulay Culkin's podcast, but it's so goofy.
Oh, yeah.
And you would think
he was on Maron.
Yeah, he was on Maron. And that was like one of his first interviews in basically a decade. And I was like, okay, this is going to be good. This is going to be great. And it really wasn't. Like, it was pretty shallow. And I think that's just because he's like really, I think he's still really guarded about,
yes,
you know, just
100%.
Just his life, like, obviously the family that he grew up in, and his relationship with Michael Jackson. Like, there's just so much like old drama that he doesn't want a part of him anymore. That he doesn't talk about it. Even now that he's like trying to get back out there and get a little more public, like, he just wants to get out there and make stuff that he likes, which is totally fine. But that one was less interesting. But then you get somebody who I think is probably going to be like super one dimensional, and I don't know much about them. But I'm just like, it's probably not going to be that interesting because they always play like, I always feel like they always play like similar roles in movies, like Josh Brolin. And then I listen to it and it's a damn good episode. I love getting surprised by Marc Maron interviews because you just never know what you're going to get. And sometimes you get a dud, and I feel like that's rare because oftentimes he's just nailing it. He's just pulling out something, and it must just be something about his personality where people are like, you know what?
Well, he just asks questions.
Yeah,
and...
but they get those questions. I'm sure they get questions like that other times, but there's something about whether it be, you know, his atmosphere, like all the shit that he just has laying around makes it feel like home. I don't know, but there comes a point where a person is asked a question and they're faced with a second question, which is like, okay, am I going to go into this or not? And oftentimes in Maron, they're like, yeah, okay, sure. I'll talk about this. And that's what's so great about that show. And that's why I think it's special. And it's one of the shows that's got my girlfriend recently into podcasts like that one. And I guess Dax Shepard has a kind of similar interview show that's apparently pretty good. I've not listened to it yet, but
they had some weird like beef a few months ago, him and Maron.
Really?
Yeah, it was because like who's Dax Shepard's wife? The sloth lady?
Elsa.
Who loves sloth.
Frozen woman.
Kristen Bell?
Yeah.
Am I right? Okay, yeah. So
Veronica Mars.
Yeah, like Maron texted Dax, because Dax was on the show, and he was like, hey, do you think Kristen would want to come on the show? And Dax texts back, you know, something to the effect of like, oh, but like, you won't appear on my show. Like, apparently Dax had asked Mark to be on his show after he was on WTF. It's just like a whole bunch of weird podcast drama, and the fact that it exists is weird, but like, they patched it up, obviously, and they figured things out. But like, I remember reading about that, or no, Maron actually described it, because that's just the kind of dude he is. He just talks about, he just loves airing his like his shit,
yeah, he does,
for everybody to hear. Maybe I think that's part of his recovery, though, is like being open and honest about his issues, and that's probably what makes it endearing. But that's the thing, though, that I don't get joy from that podcast.
Yeah.
I gain insight,
yeah,
no doubt. I gain knowledge from it, and I learn things about people and life. But it's not one of the ones that I'm like, cue it up. Like, immediately. It's not my priority list. And I could probably never listen to a Marc Maron episode again and be okay with it. But I'm not going to do that.
It seems like you listen to a lot of interview shows, though.
Yeah, like a one-on-one thing. Like, I don't listen to the two guys talking thing very often. Mm-hmm. And I guess it depends on what you define as interview shows, I guess.
I mean, like, you say you're listening to Alec Baldwin's podcast, and I think his is somewhat similar to Maron's and Dax Shepard's and others like that, right? Where they just bring on a guest and interview them.
Yeah, and you're listening to it mostly just to hear. Yeah, that was a good episode. I was talking about Alec Baldwin and Katie Couric, but yeah, you're talking about Katie Couric's own podcast.
Yeah, I think she did the circuit, because I don't know if she did Maron, but she did Dax Shepard's too.
She did Maron, yep. Yeah. I don't know. It's just it's that, back to that joy thing, mm-hmm. You know, like, it's just, what can you part with? And like, I mean, I guess faced with it, you know, gun to the head, what would you say? Like, to, like, if you had to stop listening, if you were only allowed to listen, like, if podcasts became a pay for thing and you could subscribe to 5 podcasts for whatever your budget is a month, you know, like, and you can pay more to have more podcasts subscribed to. That's like everybody's greatest fear, I bet. But like, yeah, I mean, could you whittle it down if you had to?
Yeah. And I frequently do, because I pick up a lot of shows. Like, just over time, I'll pick up, you know, a couple of shows that I hear about, and I listen to the first episode. I'm like, okay, this is good. I download a couple more. But then that just adds to the stuff that's coming in, and it gets overwhelming. But yeah, I trim fairly often, actually. Lately, since my schedule is changing up, I've had to make some decisions on ones I'm not going to listen to. And usually those are more like the trivia shows, like you talked about earlier. I was listening to The Omnibus, which is the new show with Ken Jennings of Jeopardy fame and John Roderick from The Long Winters. And it's a really interesting show, because they're both like, I mean, they're brilliant men. Like, they're very smart and knowledgeable about an array of weird topics. But they publish twice a week, and I can't keep up.
Oh shit.
And if I can't,
that's a lot.
Yeah. And the topics are always so random that it's not like I can, just like pick one because it sounds interesting, because they all sound equally interesting because they're all just completely random. It'll be Milli Vanilli 1 week, and then it'll be like some tar pits somewhere. Like, you know, it's always something new. And I always learn stuff from it, and I love that, but I just can't do it. So yeah, there's a lot of shows like that where I've just had to trim them back. And with Marin, I let the episodes come in, but I'll always like trim it if it's an interview that I'm not interested in.
Mm-hmm.
And every once in a while I'll listen to one that it's somebody that I'm not like acutely aware of. Like it's a person that I don't know much about their career, and those are interesting, but most of the time I cut them out because there's so many shows that I have to listen to on a weekly basis to, you know,
have to. The language
I know,
the language is so interesting that we use,
but it is,
to describe these things.
It's weird. Like I've cut back a lot actually in technology. I was an avid listener to every single show on the Relay Network for a long time. But then they kept adding new shows, and, you know, I'd try them out, and usually I'm just like, well, this one's, you know, I can get the same amount of info from this other one. And then I started thinking about it more deeply, and I'm like, okay, I listened to The Talk Show, Connected, Upgrade, and ATP. They're all talking about basically the same stuff every week. Which ones can I afford to lose? And it sucks because, you know, they're podcasts with people that, whose opinions I value and people I respect, but I can't listen to the same, more or less the same opinions about the new MacBook Pro on five different shows every single week.
Right.
Like there's just, yeah, there's no need. So I've trimmed that back. I basically just listen to The Talk Show with Gruber, and I listen to ATP. Unfortunately, like cutting out the tech shows from a Relay is basically meant I listen to maybe two or three shows on Relay now, and most of them not all the time. But yeah, I guess apart from those, though, like the ones I listen to every single week are a lot of the, I picked up a lot of the Crooked Media shows just because, I don't know, I trimmed a lot of politics stuff from my Twitter, a lot of mute filters, a lot of blocks, a lot of unfollows. Like I couldn't have it berating me when I wasn't expecting it. I made lists, like Twitter lists, so if I wanted to read about it, I could go there and I could get my dose. And I feel like the political podcasts that I listen to, as much as they're just like reaffirming my own beliefs, it's very much like a very liberal bubble that I live in. It's a place where I can go to find out what the hell is going on right now. You know, like what I should be paying attention to. And so I listen to like Pod Save America and all those in that way. But a lot of shows, like they're just like, they're ways for me to calm down. People definitely live more stressful lives than I do, but I'm pulled in so many different directions with so many different, you know, jobs and school and responsibilities and stuff that podcasts are just, I guess, yeah, just like a way to kind of escape. So shows like, Due by Friday, Reconcilable Differences, Roderick on the Line. Like these are ones I listen to every single week because they bring me joy. Harmontown is another one of those. I've listened to like all 330 episodes of that. So those are ones that I have to listen to them all the time. And then there are others where I'm, you know, usually learning about something. Like you and I both listen to Love and Radio. That's one. I think it's really interesting.
Oh man. I love that show so much.
It's so
that's my
weird.
That's my number one podcast.
But
I can't recommend it though to a lot of people because it's pretty raunchy.
Yeah, it's well,
and like
it's,
I can't be like, Mom, listen to this podcast about, you know, a dominatrix. It doesn't always work.
Oh, but it's so good because it's always just the weirdest folks, like the guy that wants to like splice together species, and that'll be 1 week, and then you got a Scientologist the next week, and then you've got Adrian Street. I love the Adrian Street episode. The wrestler.
Yeah, that was great.
That's maybe one of my all time favorites.
How about that one when they read the reports, like the torture reports from like Guantanamo?
Yeah.
And they had that person whispering and like the horrible music and like
their editing is
every
on
episode
another
level. It's every episode is like a different producer pretty much and a different story. So you're never gonna get the same thing twice. And I think the best part about it is how adventurous they are with sounds and yeah, it just...
There's that episode where it was just sounds. Like, it was, I think, it was probably a replay from another feed, because they do that during the off season. But they brought in, they brought in that show where it was just basically somebody used to carry around a recorder with them and just kind of like record their surroundings. And that was fascinating. That was a really cool like soundscape. Yeah. Loving radios.
Oh, but the best part about that show is like the way that, because as different as every episode is and every subject is, they have this way of, it's kind of like the show don't tell, or like the 2 + 2 = 5 kind of scenario where like, you know, you're showing them the parts and they have to figure out the whole for themselves. Mm-hmm. Like what was the season premiere, I think 2 seasons ago, was about that guy who would beat the lie detector test. And basically like you're learning all about this guy and the lie detector test. And then halfway, maybe like 10 minutes into the episode, 5-10 minutes into the episode, the guy is talking over a phone call and you hear like an operator, like an automated operator, cut in and be like, your time at like this prisoner's time has expired on the phone. And I just learned that the prisoner, that this subject is a prisoner. Mm-hmm. And they're using a calling card right now to talk to the interviewer. And I just think it's the most brilliant writing or like exposition or editing,
it's,
whatever.
Yeah,
you
it's
want
all
to call
in the
it
edit too, because they just, these people, the interviewers generally just go out and they just record a ton. And
yeah,
I think it's just, we so got a inspiring little peek behind the scenes during the last episode, which I did not like, but they were kind of like coaching the person that they're interviewing to talk in a certain tense.
Yep.
And I was like, oh man, like I wonder how many times they have to do that, because they never put that on the show, but on this one they did, which I felt like it didn't spoil the twist, but mm-hmm. it was interesting to kind of get that peek, because yeah, like they
was there a twist?
Well, I guess I didn't see it coming. Like I didn't really know where they were going.
We're talking about the episode of Love and Radio with like the Trump guy. They're, I guess, I don't know.
The Kerry liberal turned conservative, like radicalized sometime.
The John Kerry liberal
during the Obama
conservative.
Era, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And the twist is that he became conservative.
Right. That was the twist. Yeah, and okay. I guess I didn't see that coming. Like listening to him, like, man, this kind of sounds like, you know, one of those like, like conservative bros, but he's talking about the Kerry thing. I'm like, okay. Like I wasn't a Kerry guy myself, but you know, I'm down with his passion. And then, you know, it just like flips and that was the turn. I don't know. I don't want to talk about that episode just cause it really did frustrate me. It's just like, we don't need to give any more like entitled white men a platform, but, yeah, like, I don't know, podcasts are, it's a strange thing because they're not all the same. And I feel like that's something that people have to learn for themselves when they're trying to get into podcasts, because people ask me all the time, they're like, I want to start listening to podcasts. What do I listen to? And I'm like, well, you know, I have my favorite shows, but you're not going to find reconcilable differences interesting, because it's like, it's two dads talking about their children and the bird that keeps like tapping on the side of their chimney. And like, that's not going to be interesting to you unless you've listened to, you know, 700 episodes of other shows that those two people have been on. It's just, it's a completely different thing, but I don't know. It's weird because you have those shows that you found because of other shows. And then you have completely different shows where they're talking about technology or, the single topic shows, like,
you know what it is, it's kind of like you ever heard of the term like in speak,
like in, like, I'm assuming that that's like in jokes, like you just kind of, you're in the bubble.
It is, yeah. And so like, you, when you talk about these group of people that are podcasting and like, you know, very incestuous with their like podcasts, you know, like he's in this podcast,
yes, the
that
6 degrees
in this podcast,
of,
and that's
of Merlin,
yeah,
man.
And you hear about these people, and like, I feel like that's part of it. Like, I remember with Venetia Fair, like, I remember a lot of their success was attributed to how well they developed their in-speak. You know, music aside, it was their presence with their fans, mm-hmm. and their way they interacted with them. That was such a huge thing. And that goes, and every successful band or, like, you know, actor, I feel like, even sometimes has a method of in-speak with their fans, or comedians, I guess. I guess a lot of comedians have good in-speak, you know, and it's like you said, inside jokes. And I feel like that's kind of what makes a podcast alluring.
Yeah. Well,
you
know,
or
like
allows you, it's like your gateway. It's a gateway into a podcast, you know?
Yeah. It's the familiarity though, because it's, you know, listening to any show for a long, long time, there's this weird phenomenon where you feel like you know the people that you're listening to because you spend so much time with them. You know, like with the Hello Internet podcast, for example, you're listening to CGP Grey and Brady Heron for 2 hours every like 2 weeks or whatever they decide their schedule is going to be for this year. You spend so much time with these people that you feel like you know them to a degree, but if you were to see them on the street, it would be so, it's just so weird because they have no idea who the hell you are. And I ran into this head on when I went to WWDC this year, you know, like, you know, first timer here at the Apple conference, like the biggest collection of geekdom.
Worldwide developer conference.
Yeah. This is Apple's conference where they put on stuff, but like all of these Apple podcasters and bloggers that I'm aware of and these programmers that I know, like they're all descending on this one place where I am now. Also, like it's weird because I'm listening to them every single week for hours. I know way too many things about their lives. They have no idea who I am. So when I'm sitting in the second row of the live talk show performance at WWDC, I am sitting directly behind John Siracusa, who is, you know, somebody that I massively admire. He's a brilliant man. Like I think he's a genius, but what do I even say to him? Like, I don't even know. Like, I don't even know how to say hello. Like, I don't even want to take a selfie with him because I know enough about him to know that he doesn't like taking selfies, you know? Like, there's no, like, in. And I know that if I were to say hello, it would be totally fine. And he'd be super friendly, and it would be a really, like, cool little experience. But I don't have the guts to say anything because there's this weird disconnect. And me as a podcaster, not that we have, like, fans maybe as dedicated as John Siracusa does, but I know, like, I'm aware of that disconnect. And so that, like, keeps me away. But it's a weird thing to be so into these people's lives. And I guess this is probably the same thing that people who, you know, subscribe to these YouTube channels are like, they just, you know, they fangirl and they don't know what to say. I guess it's really no different than like listening to music, but I don't know, with my years of experience in the music industry, like talking to a musician wasn't that much different because I know they're a human. And so is John Siracusa, but it's like, it's different because I know enough about his life and Merlin Mann's life and Marco Arment and John Gruber. Like I listen to these people so often that I feel like I know their personalities on an intimate level.
You only know what they give you though.
I know, but you know, over time, like you're getting, sure, it's mostly a performance, but in a way, like over time you're collecting the little tiny bits of their real selves that slip. And in a lot of cases, I feel like podcasters are pretty honest to begin with. Like there's no reason to hide anything. They're not like famous people. Like John Siracusa is not famous. Like he's well known in a very tiny circle. Like San Jose during June is the only time where he's going to walk around and people are going to know who he is. It's the only time he's ever going to get, you know, he's going to run into somebody on the street and they're going to know who he is because they're looking for him at WWDC. Like even if he has people in his hometown that listen to him, if they don't know that they live in the same town as him, they're not going to be like, oh, that's John Siracusa, because he's a voice. Like he's a voice that they're listening to, not a face. And I feel like that's where it maybe differs from other celebrities or even musicians, because musicians are giving themselves to you on stage. So you like know their face. You don't know that much about their personal lives just because what they're experiencing, they're giving to you through music, which is abstracted. It's written in musical prose. So there's other things that come into play with the stuff that they're giving you. But with podcasting, it's just a conversation that you're a part of, but you're only listening. Like they're not hearing you when you're talking back to them in the car. Not that I do that, but you know what I mean?
I can imagine like, you doing that.
It's a very unique experience where you, It's a very weird one-sided relationship, which honestly,
I don't know. I don't find it too different from the musician thing at all. You know, just it, because I mean, if you invest in a musician, there are people who like, I don't really get it, but will totally fangirl or fanboy mm-hmm. over a musician and, you know, like read every article that gets posted about them, start a Tumblr blog yeah. with like their stuff on it. You know, comment on their videos and like try and open dialogues, tweet at them. And like, regardless of whether there's a face or not to it, you know, it's just, it's all building up this personality of something. And that's why I said before, like you're only getting what they give you. Like you don't know their deepest fears, and maybe they give you deepest fears yeah. in an episode or something like that, or like give an example of it, but like, you don't know what their like what their money situation is like. I mean, very few people are open about that as it is, and I feel like most people are pretty reserved about their financial situations in terms of their broadcasting it or podcasting it. Like, it's just, I don't know.
But to that point, there are a lot of people that I know in real life where I don't know their deepest fears and I don't know what their money situation is, but I'm not listening to them for 4 hours a week.
I mean, sometimes if they're your coworker, you might have
maybe. But it's different. And that's a context where there is a two-way dialogue.
That's like at HeadGum. You know, I started at HeadGum 3 years ago, and then about a year and a half into it, We Hate Movies joins HeadGum. And I was a huge We Hate Movies fan, like, for those that year and a half that leading up to it. And then I woke up one morning and, you know, they just mentioned, I think my boss at HeadGum was like, oh yeah, like we're recording We Hate Movies right now. And I was like, oh my God, really? I can't wait to record them. And it's been a year and a half and they still haven't given it to me, probably because they know I'd fanboy out too hard recording them. I wouldn't be able to like stop. They also record mostly by themselves in their own apartment at their own setup. But like the handful of times they've gone to the HeadGum studios, I have not been asked to do those podcasts.
Because they know? Or just by
chance? No, I think it's honestly just because the schedule doesn't work out. And because in a year, they've been with HeadGum probably almost 2 years now, and they probably have been in the studio like 4 or 5 times, if I had to guess.
Gotcha. Yeah. Man, podcasting, it's a kind of a small world, too. You never know. Like,
if you live in a major city.
No, I live in Ohio, and I work in podcasting, too, but it's still small. Like, I work for Breaker, which is a podcast app. And we work with podcasters on, you know, a number of different things. Like we currently have a new thing where you can like host premium content that people can listen to in the Breaker app. And it's like, it's secure and it's like a great service, blah, blah, blah. So check it out. But I got an email from my friend, Chris Lantinen, who hosts the Modern Vinyl podcast, which I've been a guest on. He had no idea that I worked at Breaker. I had no idea that he was aware of Breaker. But he emailed about, you know, like an issue of one of the feeds not refreshing in the Breaker app or something. And it was actually my boss, Leah, who got back to the email before I did. And I saw that she was replying to Chris. And I'm like, Chris could have just texted me, but he had no idea. It's small like that. And then when the other day, my other boss, Eric, is showing me how to do some stuff in a Ruby console, we're like, okay, let's see if there are any duplicated podcasts so I can show you how to merge a podcast. And we look through and they're in like the top duplicated show titles. There is a title of a show that's, you know, a show I didn't know existed, hosted by Jonathan Mann, who is the Song a Day guy who did the theme song for Accidental Tech Podcast, which I listen to every single week. Like it's a very small world. You're always like bumping into these things and there's all these overlapping Venn diagrams and you know, the 6 degrees of whoever you can generally get to somebody's podcast. Usually the connection is John Hodgman, but it's a weird thing. I love podcasting. I love the whole world. Like the thing about podcasting is everybody's generally so nice. And this, you know, this may change as podcasting become so much more lucrative, I guess. These are conversations that you and I have all the time about, you know, how like advertisers are coming in and they want these certain things. They want these metrics. They want, you know, segmented podcasts with dynamic ad insertion and all these things that I feel like really ruin what makes podcasts really special. But at the same time, like I support content creators getting paid for the stuff they're doing. I love when a podcaster can make some money on their show. I think that's fantastic. And I, you know, most of the subscriptions that I have now are to podcasters or podcast networks where there are hosts that I enjoy and I want to support. But in general, everybody's so nice. Like even all the podcasters that I say I was really nervous to meet at WWDC, I met most of them. Like, my company hosted an after party at the end of the week, and like John and Casey and Marco and like all Vitici, Mike Hurley, like all of the Relay Sphere people, they came to the party and they were all super nice. And I got selfies with some of them. And I never asked for selfies, but these are people that like I genuinely admire and like listen to all the time. So I was like, okay, these people live in Italy and, you know, the UK. Like, I better get this picture now or I'm never going to get it. And it's just weird because I just feel like the music industry should have more parallels than it does. And having worked in the music industry for so long, like I felt like I knew how to be comfortable in an industry where, you know, I'm working with people that I also enjoy and admire. And for podcasting, somehow there's just this weird disconnect where it's just so much different. And I,
you know why? It's because the music industry, they're both in different like arcs, different points in their arc of their industry. You know, like the music industry is being gutted, has been gutted.
You're saying podcasters aren't jaded yet?
No, well, not jaded, but I would say that, you know, like you just mentioned a minute or two ago about how much more lucrative podcast is becoming, mm-hmm. and I think it's relatively lucrative, you know, it's getting there, but I still think it's on its upswing. And music, like, I don't know if it's hitting its decline, but it's like it's been totally gutted and turned inside out with the changes that have been going on in streaming. And you know, that's probably the niceness factor, is that like podcasting has almost everything going for it right now. It's an unregulated medium, pretty much. You can't force somebody to put an ad in. You can't make somebody not skip an ad. You can't do anything. Like, it's just, there's no like DRM you can insert into a podcast yet, you know, like there's no podcast trackers that are preventing you. There's you know, like Stitcher Premium or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, like there's paywalls for sure. But they're always opt-in, and the creators are always, you know, trying to find other ways. They're trying to, like, you know, Marin has, you know, like the most 60 recent podcast out, which is, you know, probably 100 hours of stuff.
It's plenty.
So you're always going to have something. It's plenty. And it's like, oh, if you really want the back catalog, if there's somebody you really want, you can pay for this. Yeah. But usually you want that one person when they die, and he always re-releases their interview when they die. Yeah. You know, it's so.
True. Yeah, it's very rare that I'll have to, I want to go back and listen to an old episode of Marin. And This American Life has recently started doing that even more than they used to. Like, I think it's only the past like 10, maybe even less now, that are available in the feed. I don't know, they redid the feed when they redid their app, and maybe they just kind of like refreshed or restarted the podcast feed. But yeah, I don't know, podcast, man, it's something we're doing.
Yeah, we'll talk about that like a different day probably. Yeah, you know, just like the act of podcasting, but listening in itself, like, I don't know, if I have to take away one thing from this, it's just the idea of finding something that, like, a podcast that brings you joy. And I don't know, and it just, you know, realizing that, like, I mean, everybody's different. My podcasting time is my idle time, my time that is like being filled by something else already, and I need, like you said, just, you know, something to keep me company for that one commute a day, or those two commutes a day. Mm-hmm. But for some people, you know, I'm sure some people come home and listen to podcasts like it's the radio, you know, like it's just, like it's an event for them. That's what it used to be, you know, like This American Life once a week on my Apple Podcast app.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I mean, it started out as radio on demand for me. It was like, okay, this is a radio show that maybe I could even hear on the radio, but I can't listen to it right now because I'm busy, but it'll be there later. And it's just evolved this uncontrollable monster on my cell phone. That takes up so much space because I'm using two podcast apps in tandem. Like, I really need to like just start deciding which shows I'm going to listen to and in which app and when I'm actually just going to let Overcast go. But
would you let Overcast go?
Currently, I'm still using Overcast for the shows where show notes or where chapters are really important. Because Breaker doesn't yet have chapters. So like those long-winded tech episodes where I want to skip the section about the Mac Pro, I need those chapter markers. So Overcast is still important for that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think at some point I would love if I'm able to just use the podcast app that pays my bills. Like, Breaker has been so good to me, and I do love the app. Like, there's a lot of features on here that I really enjoy. And yeah, I could totally give up Overcast just right now. Like, I'm still hanging on so that I can use both, and, you know, they can inform my opinions.
I think a change of scenery is always nice too, you know, just getting into a different app every once in a while.
Yeah, yeah. That was part of the reason that we switched podcast hosts. It's like I needed something different than Libsyn. That was just
well, Libsyn is like the most stale, boring. This is for another day. We can talk about that some other day. We could go on for like another 2 hours about our hosting choices.
Okay, so
oh man,
before we finish this out, see if you can name your favorite, your all time favorite three podcasts, and then two that you could recommend to a new listener.
Okay, three all time favorites. Yeah. Love and Radio, number one. Mm-hmm. We Hate Movies because of the joy it brings me. And This American Life because of its consistency. Mm. My top three podcasts.
Okay. You know, I should have prepared these before I asked you.
Oh, okay.
Okay, top three, Roderick on the Line,
mm-hmm.
Reconcilable Differences, and Heavyweight, probably.
Oh, wow, okay.
Love that show. And the two...
It is very good.
The two that I recommend, would be, you know what? I'm going to swap them. I'll say of my favorite, Due by Friday, is probably up there. I feel weird about that because all three of those shows feature Merlin Mann. But I genuinely, I love that man. And then Heavyweight would definitely be one that I recommend. And, shoot.
Recommending's tough.
It is tough because it has to be something that somebody can.
You wouldn't recommend the same podcast to your parent that you would recommend to your best friend.
Yeah.
I mean, depending on their interests.
These would have to be more general interest shows. Like, I feel like Heavyweight is something that anybody could listen to and really get something from.
Yeah, there is a trajectory of that show that is kind of captivating to no matter who you are.
What about you? That's one. Maybe I'll think of another.
Recommendation ones?
Yeah.
Ooh, okay. I mean, it depends what you want to do. I mean, things like, I think it's important. I think Radiolab More Perfect is important to listen to because, especially if you're an American, you know, that's just, it's your Supreme Court and the decisions that have been made about America. I think that's important to listen to. So I'd recommend that based on that. I don't know. Like, these are like, it feels like I'm recommending, you know, like Drake as a musician if I'm recommending Reply All. But yeah. Like, I think Reply All is pretty important to listen to.
I just started getting into it. And I got into it through the call center episode, which I think is probably pretty common.
Yeah, that one just got rebroadcast, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, it's just important to have to like internet smarts, I guess. It's like, I deal with so many people that are out of touch with technology on a daily basis that like, I just wish they understood this, like a certain meme, or I wish they understood like internet security or how Amazon works, or like that most Amazon reviews are bullshit. Mm-hmm. Just something like that. And then Reply All usually covers those internet bases. There's a million podcasts that could probably do that too, but I mean, Reply All is just the easiest one to dip your toes into. Mm-hmm. Third recommendation. If you're trying to learn, like if you're new to podcasts, Showcase from Radiotopia, because that one changes up every 5 to 8 episodes. Mm-hmm. It's a new show. So it's a feed that just changes every few weeks totally. So like, you know, now they just did this profile of this, the great god of depression, this guy who wrote the book on depression, essentially. The guy who wrote Rosemary's Baby, mm-hmm. I think. No, Sophie's Choice. Holy shit. Totally different there. Not Rosemary's Baby. He wrote Sophie's Choice, but he also wrote the book on depression. And then before that was, I don't want to give that one any talking about, but like Ways of Hearing. It was talking about like digital versus, analog audio and the changes that have been made. And that was like a 6-episode series or something like that. So yeah, it's super varied over the course of time. And yeah, so if you're learning one, so Showcase, Reply All, and More Perfect are like three super easy to get into podcasts because they're so mainstream and well put together. Yeah,
those are three that I have not really listened to much, but I've been wanting to for a while. Just time. Again, it just comes down to time. Like, I have to cut to pick up more. And I picked up, I listened to the entire Bundyville series the other day. Easily.
Oh, because they put it on 99% Invisible. They did the first episode.
Oh, did they?
That made me really want to listen to the whole thing.
Oh, I recently subscribed to a newsletter that sends out like a good recommendation of a new podcast. I don't know if it's every week or every month, but it's not very often. But whenever like a really good show comes out, they usually advertise it. And this one, I was kind of disappointed in. It's it could have easily been done in like two episodes rather than seven or eight half hour episodes. And also, every single one of their ads was for WordPress, and it was only 30 seconds long, and it was the same every time. So you basically just heard the same 30 second spot 16 times. That annoyed me, but that's, yeah, not one I would recommend. Once I would recommend though, what was the first one? What was the first one I said?
Merlin's shows, a bunch of Merlin shows.
Oh, Heavyweight. Heavyweight is one that I would recommend. I would also recommend Stay Tuned with Preet. It's a politics podcast, but it's, and the host is definitely on the left. Maybe that it won't interest people, but I Preet is a former state prosecutor for the state of New York, and I feel that he comes at things with more of a law perspective rather than a political one, which I find very refreshing, and I feel like I learn a lot more from his shows than I do anything else. And then this would be kind of like a twofer recommendation to round out a three, because Terrible, Thanks for Asking, and The Hilarious World of Depression very much hit the same notes for me. Like, they're both about terrible things and how it's going to be okay anyway. And I think that's something that I think a lot of people need to hear more, especially as mental health becomes more of a large topic of conversation in the culture. And I think people need that, especially in times like these. So, yeah, I think those are ones that people could pick up and just get, because it's mostly about stories. Like, stories are my favorite thing to listen to in a podcast, and that's why I like serialized stuff. But these are three that I think would just be good for people to hear.
Hmm. You listen to so many dudes talking, though.
Yeah, I know. I do listen to females too. Like, Terrible Things for Asking is hosted by Nora McInerney, and I think she's incredible. She's one of my favorite hosts.
I just meant the genre of podcast dudes talking.
My all time favorites are
also some women, yes.
My all time three favorite podcasts are one dude talking with Merlin. Mostly. Yeah. Well, I guess Dude by Friday has Alex Cox as well, so that's one dude and one gal talking to Merlin. But yeah. Oh. Are there any shows you binge? Like, this is something I need.
S-Town.
Okay.
S-Town and Serial. But I mean, Serial was released weekly. S-Town was released all at once.
Yeah.
So I guess I binged S-Town. I binged Sandra.
Yeah.
When it came out. It's the Gimlet Fiction podcast, which I thought was better than Homecoming.
Yes.
Ultimately went nowhere, and was disappointed at the end of it, but that's fine.
What about older shows? Like, are there old shows where you're like working through a back catalog?
No, not anymore. Okay. I gave up on that.
Interesting.
Yeah, I mean, like, I would do it with This American Life, but it's just too much, and I think this conversation has inspired me to do some metaphorical de-hoarding, cleaning out of the podcast closet, and just kind of like finding what I really want to do, how I want to spend my 45 minutes entranced, as opposed to, you know, just hustling through my friend reading a script that he wrote to a movie he's never seen, you know, like that's not, I guess it sounds like some weird kind of purgatory you put yourself in.
Oh, it is. I mean, yeah, it's debilitating in a way, because there's, you know, I'm very aspirational about the person that I want to be, but I very rarely do anything to like really put that into action. And I want to be a person that reads more books. I want to be a person that takes more walks. Like, I want to be more present and more like learned. But podcasts are so passively easy to just slip back into. Like it's just a thing to fill the time. Like it's easier than just like going to find a book or pulling up a book. Like I can't read a book while I'm driving, so I listen to podcasts, but then that just feeds into that addiction to podcasts, which just makes the rest of my life harder. And I don't know. This is
probably what keeps me from finishing Star Wars books.
Yeah, no, it's same here, man. Like it's no different. Like when do you read books? You read them on the subway. And what are you doing instead? You're listening to This American Life. Like you only have so much free time and you have to dedicate it somewhere. You have to allocate that time to whatever your choice of entertainment is. And for me, it's not books, and it should be books. Like I'm going to reach over here and grab this really quick because it's relevant. I have this book by James Thurber. It's called My Life in Hard Times. It's his autobiography and it's super, super short. How short? It is 86 pages long. I've had this checked out from the library for 4 months. I have completed 32 pages. That's ridiculous. These are really good stories too. Like this is something I'm interested in and I've been wanting to read for a long time. And yet I can't finish an 86 page book. It's ridiculous.